Well, we are in this, well, not a sermon series, just a 1 week this week where I want to take some time to emphasize our strategy as a church to reach the next generation. And I want to talk to you about this. We did a whole series on it last year where we described our church's strategy and why it was important. And I want to echo that, and I want to just really drive this into the vision for our church, because I think it's really, really important for a lot of reasons that I want to emphasize today. And, you know, I know that not all of you have kids, and some of you, you've raised kids. Some of you, you're single or you're newly married and you don't have kids yet. And I know that a message like this can be like, oh, well, here we go. You know, all these things that I get to hear about but don't get to really apply. But I want to inspire you and encourage you that you have a role to play and that we all have a role to play. And it's so very important that we reach the next generation, that we pass our faith on to the next generation, because when we are old and gray, and maybe some of you are already old and gray, they're going to be the ones calling the shots and leading our world into this next phase of where we're going. And so let's hope that they take the reins and they know what they're doing. And that's really on us to help them understand what faith means, how it integrates in with their whole life. And so, you know, I want to start off just with a brief story, because I think it's important to understand the impact that we can make and the impact that we can have on the next generation. My son Judah was talking to me the other day, and he came running in from his room, and he said, "Hey, Dad, I'm going to read the Bible." And a couple weeks later, he came to me again. He was like, "Okay, I'm reading the Bible, and you know that part in Genesis where it says, 'Let us make man in our image'? Why does it say us?" Like, he was like, "Is the Bible's grammar off? Like, what's going on here? Why does it refer to us?" And of course, I was like, "Ah, you stumbled upon the mystery of the Trinity. Let me unfold it for you." And we had this brief conversation about that, which I'm sure he didn't understand, but I made an attempt. And what I loved about Judah's passion for reading the scriptures is he goes to a private Christian school where this is instilled in him as well. But really, one of the things that drove him to do that was we memorize scriptures. Our kids memorize scriptures every single week, and they're given an opportunity to recite their memory verses. And they recite their memory verses to Grandpa Bob, Bob Peel, who works with our kids in the kids ministry. And it's Bob's role and his job, and he volunteers for our VBS every year too. Bob's in, well, I won't say his age. He's well along in years, let's say. He's true grandpa. And Bob says that he always loves to show the kids grace. So even if they don't get the memory verse exactly right, you know, he explains to them, "I'm going to give you the Bible bucks anyways. Because you really tried hard, you worked hard, and I could tell that you're committed to this." And so he says, "That's grace, and I'm showing you grace right now." And he helps them understand that. And he does it with such a cheerful attitude. He's so filled with joy. He so loves that role that he has to play. And every Wednesday morning when we come pray together here, there's a men's prayer time on Wednesday mornings at 6 a.m., if any of you are interested. And Bob always tells me, you know, what happened this last week. And, "Oh, Judah came to me and he was reciting his verse and all of this." And man, I so love that somebody like Bob is willing to invest his time and to give his enthusiasm to help my son find joy in memorizing the scriptures. And, you know, the one thing I want Bob to know, and the one thing I want our church to know, is that those kinds of investments, they make an impact on these kids. And Judah's reading the scriptures, and he's wanting to, I don't know if he'll get through Genesis, I mean, but we'll see, right? But he's wanting to read the scriptures. He's interested in what's going on, and he's, as he's growing up with a passion for his faith, and that's all that you want as a parent. Our curriculum is based off of Luke chapter 2, verse 52, and I put the verse up here on the screen for you. It's just a simple verse, the end of the birth nativity story that Luke tells. He says, "And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature, and in favor with God and man. And this really describes up until the time he's 12, which is a kind of a brief window of a story that they tell about when Jesus was 12 and his parents lost him at the temple and all this. And then it just goes to when he was 30. And so you're like, I would have liked to know a little bit more about how he grew up, but this is really all that we get. And Luke says he grew in wisdom. He grew in stature, in favor with God and man. And I love the simplicity of this particular passage. Jesus, he grew in wisdom, which means his mind was developed, right? I mean, he grew in wisdom. He read the scriptures. He learned from them. He grew in stature. He was a healthy young boy. He grew in size and strength. And then in favor with God and man. And I think the connection between those two things is so key. Because I think for so many people, they think that a certain, you know, people who are overtly religious, like certainly Jesus was, are kind of, you know, of so heavenly minded, they're of no earthly good, right? They're just kind of religious nut jobs or fundamentalists or whatever. But you can grow in favor with God, and that should translate to having favor with man. Because the best kind of Christian man or Christian woman is a person who's filled with all the traits that every single person in this world would want to surround themselves with that person. With joy and peace and love and grace and compassion. And so Jesus, as he grew in favor with God, he grew in favor with man. And so this is our strategy. This is really what our kids' curriculum is based on. And, you know, increasingly, we've been challenged to really make this more than what goes on downstairs, right? We want our strategy for reaching the next generation to be more than just what happens downstairs. So it involves those of you in this room. We've been working on this as a staff. We talk about it constantly. You know, how can we equip our church to really invest their best in the next generation is a phrase that we use. And, you know, the strategy that we've come up with, in fact, Kyle mentioned it this morning in our parent cue sheets. He talked about some different ways that you can use the curriculum throughout the week as parents and just continue to feed into the faith lives of your kids. And the passage of scripture that we use for this strategy comes from Deuteronomy chapter 6. And in Deuteronomy 6, God is speaking to his people and he's explaining them what he wants them to do with all these commands that he has just given them. All these words that he says will bring them life. And in Deuteronomy 6, beginning in verse 6, it says this, "These commands that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them to your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and your gates." And let's just go through a few of these just for a moment. First of all, he says, impress these things upon your children. He says, talk about them when you sit at home, right? When you're eating a meal. And so we have within our parent queue, one of the things is, hey, during mealtime, here's a few questions to ask. And here's a few things to bring up. Talk about them when you're walking along the road. Well, we drive now. And so there's this opportunity while we're driving. Hey, have a conversation. Drive time. That's what that's for. During drive time, you can ask this question or you can engage in this activity. When you lie down and when you get up, there's bedtime cues in our parent queue for you to bring up these conversations during bedtime prayers, right? During this time in which you're trying to calm everyone down and put them to bed. And I remember the stage when we had toddlers, that would take like an hour. It was brutal. But they're symbols. Tie them on your hands. Bind them on your foreheads. Literally, in the Jewish tradition, they would literally tie these leather bands with scripture verses on their fingers across their foreheads just to remember these things. And then, you know, on the door frames of your houses, on your gates. I'm not one of these people, but I know a lot of people, you know, they have, you know, a day hemmed in prayer will rarely unravel, you know, signs crocheted on their walls. And, you know, I'm not really into that kind of art, but I know people who do it. And, you know, it's literally all over their house. Valerie McNair. Yeah. Might be one of those people. But But you know, there's these constant reminders, right? And it's just one of those visuals that just brings you back. Oh, this is a place of faith. This is a family that believes in prayer. You know, these are things that constantly bring us back to the center. And so the big idea here is it has to be constant. And the strategy for the church in the past has always been, or I think even for families, well, we want our kids to grow in faith, and so let's send them to Sunday school, and they'll fix them there, you know? And that just doesn't work, right? It's one day a week. It's just not enough. We need a full-scale effort to really, as our role as the church is to equip parents, to help them help educate their kids. And yes, we're doing some of that right now as we speak, but we want you to make sure that you are armed with everything that you need to be able to have a consistent conversation and to really instill these values within your kids, our kids. And they really are our kids. There's a bunch of other things that you need that we're going to talk about here more in a moment. But here's what I know from personal experience. Kids grow up extremely fast. And before we know it, they're going to be adults. And they have this tremendous amount of energy and influence. And soon, they're going to be shaping our culture. They're going to be shaping our world. We're literally going to be handing the baton off to them. And I'm always humbled by the thought that the most significant impact that I may make in the world is not necessarily something that I will accomplish myself, but it may just be the kids that I raise, right? The people that I raise. That may be the most important, most significant contribution that I have to make. My kids may go on to change the world. Your kids may go on to change the world. I think in many ways that they do. And you know, that's something I think about all the time, right? The importance of what it is that we are doing in investing in the next generation. So in this message this morning, I just want you to imagine with me what kind of an impact we can make if the church came together with the family. And again, maybe you are in the sitting here and you don't have kids. You don't have a family as of yet, or just not right now. And I just want to say, well, you're a part of that equation because you're the church. And the church and the family coming together can make a huge impact in the next generation. And so, you know, we call this Think Orange. This is what the strategy is about. And let me explain what that means. First of all, the color orange is chosen for a number of different reasons. First of all, it symbolizes health. Right? If you have vitamin C, typically it's illustrated with the color orange. I have an emergency pack right now. It's probably what's kept me from getting the flu. Just maybe not, but still, it's orange, right? It's orange because orange juice, and everybody knows vitamin C and beta carotene and carrots and all that kind of good stuff. It's orange. It's a symbol of health, and it also stands out. It's a bold color, right? You think of traffic safety vests. Typically are orange, or cones are typically orange, and they stand out, right? They're bold. Interior decorators use them to make a bold statement, right? It's a statement color. And so there's something about orange. It just gets our attention. And it's the color that is made, and that's this graphic, from yellow combining with red. When yellow combines with red, it makes orange. And of course, if you paint with red, you get what only red can get. If you paint with yellow, you get what only yellow can get. But when you combine these two, right, you get this new, fresh, vibrant color. And it's just a visual. It's a visual to think about two combined influences making an impact in a way that one influence alone could not. And so that's the visual. That's the concept behind this idea of orange, is when the church comes together with the family, and they combine their efforts, a great impact can be made. And this is seen, you know, throughout the world today. Harvard University took its influence, its knowledge, combined with the influence of television and created Sesame Street, right? Revolutionized education for kids and entertainment for kids. Walt Disney took his experience as a family man, as a father, and his incredible creative talents, And he combined those things together to create this amazing amusement park, Disneyland, right? These combined efforts. And I always like to joke that it was Richard and Valerie that combined together to create the most beautiful, smart woman that the world will ever know. And her name is Deborah. And I just happened to marry her. And she's downstairs, which means I get no brownie points before Valentine's Day, which I put that in there for brownie points, you know? So I'm going to have to bring her to the message recording. Jody, you just tell her that I said that. Make sure she knows. So, and this is the combination we're talking about, the church, the family, coming together to make an impact. And here's the sad thing. The sad thing is everything that I read, and I read a lot about the church, everything I read about the church, all the statistics that are coming out are very sad, and at least for the United States, not across the world, but for the United States, the influence of the church is waning. They say the church is statistically getting older and older year after year. And so a lot of people are coming out and they're saying the church is irrelevant. We need to find a new way forward and we need to do something different. And maybe there is even some truth to that, but you know, the influence of the church has been suffering in recent years. And then as well, and I think this is even more sad, the family is disintegrating. The family is under attack and is becoming something that is old-fashioned. You know, these old-fashioned values that we used to believe in, but they're just not working anymore. And parents are largely failing in their responsibilities. And people have been talking about this and talking about this, and the noise is out there. And so we look at these two, you know, institutions, I guess you could say, and they're not doing a very good job, or they're failing in many ways. A lot of those critiques are just, they're valid. The family is suffering and the church is suffering even greater still. And you know, people have said, well, there's got to be a better model. And so, you know, the church has made this effort, right, to help step in where the family has failed. You know, we can be a family to you, right? And there's something about that that's just so true, right? But the church steps in to try to raise kids, and it doesn't quite work out as well as a good family can do the job. And as well, there's a lot of families, and I know a few of them would say, well, you know, we've been burned by church, or we just don't enjoy the church experience anymore. You know, we don't like the music or whatever else, and so we're just going to do church at our house as a family. You know, but the sad thing is that neither of those situations are very ideal. And in a lot of ways, they're just reactions to kind of rejecting one over the other. And what we need to do is come up with a better way of strategizing, saying, hey, the church is going to be for the family. And the family is going to be for the church. And we're going to work together to make an impact, to strengthen the church and to strengthen the family. And that really is our goal in all of this, is to combine these influences to make a greater impact, to do a better job at reaching this next generation. And so that's the idea of Orange, that we're all in this together. And again, I just want to echo this. It's not just the parents and it's not just the families. Everyone has a role to play. If you're a senior without kids, if you're a young married couple and you don't have kids and you don't like kids and you don't want kids, let me tell you need kids in your life. And I want to explain for you why you need kids in your life. Because there's nothing like watching a kid throw a fit when they don't want to go to school and just recognizing how far you've come, right? Because you recognize I've matured beyond this level. Like, I am no longer a kid. I don't throw fits anymore. I'm an adult. You need that contrast to just remind yourself of that good behavior. Secondly, and I think maybe more importantly, and I'm not joking, like, you just, because sometimes we just revert back to our childish ways, and it's good to see a kid throw a good fit and just kind of recognize, oh, I'm not going to be doing that, right? That's childish. Secondly, you need children in your life. There is nothing like, I remember when we took our kids to Disneyland for the first time, and they saw, you know, the princesses, or they saw Mickey Mouse, and it was like, you know, oh my, you know, tears. It was like those girls and 16-year-old girls, the Beatles concert, you know, just crying. It was just so overwhelming. And I remember in particular when we first took Judy, he must have been, 4 years old, when we took him to Disneyland. And his favorite show at the time was called Jake and the Neverland's Pirates. And he met Jake, you know, when we cornered him. You know, he was like heading out to leave. And I was like, you're not leaving until you say hi to my son, right? So it was one of those parents. And we cornered him. And Judah had this opportunity, you know, to see him, and he was just so overwhelmed. And I remember the rest of the day, we bought him one of those pirate swords from Pirates of the Caribbean, and his imagination just went off, and he was with Jake and the Neverland Pirates, and for all he knew, they were going to be best friends, you know, from that day forward. And it was just, it was so awesome watching his imagination, watching his wonder. And what the thing that's so amazing about that is we forget that stuff as adults. We forget how fun life can be when we're that innocent and when we have that kind of an imagination, with that capacity for joy and wonder and surprise and awe and all those kinds of things. It's humbling and it's beautiful to watch. And you need kids in your life to recapture some of that, because life really isn't as bad as you think it is, right? I mean, you watch a kid and you understand that, right? It's a beautiful, wonderful thing to have these children in our lives. And so there's a necessity to have interactions with them. I just so love, and again, I mentioned at the beginning, I love people like Bob, who, you know, he's raised kids. In fact, he's raising his grandkid right now and almost done with that. But he still recognizes I have an investment to make. And he's still investing in our kids. And I think it's so beautiful. I think it's the reason why he's such a young, old man. He stayed young because he's understood his connection with the next generation. But here's the idea. The idea behind this is the church illuminates. The church illuminates. The church is represented by that color yellow for that reason. It's strategically placed on the planet to display God's glory to the world, to reveal who Jesus is. Jesus said it this way: you are the light of the world. You're a city on the hill. Don't put that light under a bowl. Let it shine for all to see. One of my favorite moments for us as a church is during Christmas Eve when we do our candlelight service. It's such a visual example of this. We're literally lighting candles and holding them up and pointing to Jesus Christ, who he is, his coming into the world, the difference that's made in our lives. We're shining that light. That's what we do as a church community. I love this quote from Anne Lamott. She's a writer and a novelist, and I put this up here just so you can kind of get an idea of what she's saying. She says, the main reason, Joe, if you go to that slide, the main reason I make my son go to church is that I want to give him what I found in the world, which is to say a path and a little light to see by. Most of the people I know who have what I want, which is to say purpose, heart, balance, gratitude, joy, are people with a deep sense of spirituality. They follow a brighter light than the glimmer of their own candle. They're part of something beautiful. I would add a little more detail to that. I'm sure that she's trying to be careful. But for me, the people that I know who have a deep sense of purpose, heart, balance, gratitude, and joy have a relationship with Jesus. And that relationship with Jesus informs everything that they do. In fact, I'm looking at some of those people in this room, and they're inspiring to me. And I want my kids to be surrounded by them. The church exists to show the world who Jesus is. And it's one thing for my children to see Jesus in me, to see Jesus in my wife. And that's incredibly important, absolutely. But it's another thing for them to see Jesus in us. It's another thing for me to be able to point to some of my good friends like Corbett or Scott Andrina or Luke Dawson and people that are investing in my kids and in my family, for me to be able to say it at certain critical points of my life, hey, look at their lives. Look at who they are. They are that way because of their love for Jesus. I'm super excited because my kids have the opportunity to go to Kenya this April, my two oldest kids, Josiah and Adelaide. And I was just in Kenya a year and a half ago. And in fact, 18 years ago was when I first went and formed a lot of the relationships that we have now. And one of the people that's going to be leading this trip in Kenya is a guy named Simon Barraza. And he's one of my favorite people in the world. And Simon has actually come here, I think it was around 15 years ago. But those of you who have ever met Simon, he lights up when you see him. He has the biggest smile. He's so filled with joy. He's an incredible man of God. The work that he has been doing over there in their church and the work through WorldComp has been absolutely incredible. And I'm so excited that my kids get to meet men of God like Simon, who love Jesus. And they get to see that we have this church, right, that exists on the other side of the world. And these people who are exhibiting some of the same traits that I hope that they see in me. And the only commonality we have, because we're from different countries and vastly different upbringings and cultures, the commonality that we have is our faith in Jesus. And if they can see that common denominator and recognize how important it is that they be men and women who love Jesus and live their lives for Jesus, then I think there's something there that can be translated to them. I think there's something there that can be deposited in them that will have lasting effects. And so, you know, the church is this powerful influence because it's this network of relationships, right? It's not just you and your spouse, you know, if you're a single parent, it's not just you that's depositing these values in your kids. It's this recognition that there's a whole church community of people that are living for these things. And that's a powerful concept. I mean, that's a lot of backup for you and a lot of support for you. And it's something I think that you need. So the church has this incredible opportunity to be a powerful influence in the next generation. That's the potential that we have in this community of people. And as well, the home, if the church illuminates, the home is the heart. I put this in red because that's the symbol. That's the color for the home. It's the heart. It's this place where these kids are nurtured. It's this place where there is unconditional love. There's something deposited in the home and something that children will receive in their home that, you know, they can't get anywhere else. I remember having a conversation with my dad. It was a year or so ago, and we were joking and laughing about inheritance because my dad had just bought this brand new boat. And to put the boat under cover, he had to build this giant barn that I'm sure cost him quite a bit of money. And I was saying, "Dad, you're spending my inheritance." And he said, "Yeah, that's the idea." He said, "I'm not leaving you anything. I'm going out with a bang." And we were just joking back and forth about that. And you know, I recognize as I was just kind of laughing, and he and I talk about this all the time. You know, he's warning me. He's like, "I'll leave you guys the house. You can fight over the house. Everything else I'm spending, man. I mean, this is, you know, this is retirement." And so, and I was like, okay, I can deal with that, right? So, but I was just recognizing, you know, I didn't even want inheritance from my dad because it's not about the possessions or the money that he can leave me. What he has instilled in us, the legacy that he has left for us, his faith and his unconditional love is more than anybody can hope for from a parent. And I feel very fortunate to have grown up in a home where it was not perfect. You know, there were a lot of things that could have been better. But we're a home where I never had to doubt or question my parents' unconditional love for me. Their support and their love for me was paramount. It was what they valued most over anything. And I felt that. I just knew that. And there are moments as a parent where you will do anything, you'll buy anything, you'll go anywhere in order to make your kids happy. And this seems to be a particular parenting strategy that has, I'm not sure it's always been, but certainly nowadays in our consumer culture, it's exasperated. And, you know, even though I realize as a parent, my job isn't to solely, you know, make sure that my kids are happy, I know there's this tendency for them to just kind of get after me until they wear me down, you know? So eventually we go to McDonald's and get McNuggets, you know, or we buy Minion dolls, you know, that one of our kids was into, or we listen to Taylor Swift instead of NPR, you know. They want to be happy, right? So I want to make them happy. And you know, and it's not that I'm trying to spoil them, right? It's just that I want them to be happy, right? And there's an entire marketing industry that's out there with this idea. And the advertisers, they know that as parents, we'll do anything and we'll do everything to make sure that our kids are socially adept, that they're experientially rich, and they're academically well-rounded. So we hire coaches, we hire tutors, we hire instructors, we hire, you know, all sorts of specialists in various areas to make sure that they can dance better and sing clearer and jump higher and hit farther than, you know, anybody else, than any other kid. And at some point, as parents, and I've been guilty of this, and maybe you'd resonate with this for those of you who are parents, we cross a line. And it can be hard to see in the moment because, you know, discipline and hard work of developing that talent can feel like it's character building. It can feel like it's important. But I know one thing that I've thought a lot about, especially in this last couple of years, as some of my kids are getting older and we've invested all these things into, especially their athletic careers, that in the pursuit of what it is that I think will make them happy and these things that I drive them to, what I don't want to squash is what makes them come alive, right? Because their happiness is not paramount and important. What makes them come alive is what's most important. And what makes them come alive, and I've found this most of the time to be true, is relationships. In relationship with them, in their relationship with me, their father, in their relationship with their mother, if they can know of our love for them, if they could recognize and see our joy in experiencing this incredible opportunity of being a family, if they can understand, you know, our love, our affection, our joy at just being with them and around them, man, that's what makes the impact. And so we need to recover the heart of this in our home. We're not just raising, you know, socially adept kids or academically and athletically well-rounded kids. We're trying to raise children who thrive, who are filled with life, and they know what makes them come alive. And it's so, so important. And so, you know, one of the things that we really want to instill within those of you who are our parents and values that we really want to get across to us as a church, there are really five things that I want to just focus on. I'm going to give you this list and then we'll dismiss this morning. But the first thing is this value. And I put a list of these things up here on the screen. But it's the first one is, what matters more than anything is that my kids have an authentic relationship with God. What matters more than anything is that. And I'll be honest with you, there are times when my priorities get out of whack, and I need to be reminded of this. And I hope as a church that we can do a better job of really constantly bringing you back to center as a parent. What matters more than anything else is that your kids have an authentic relationship with God. And that if they can develop that, if we can instill that in them, there's hope. There's hope. Secondly, all my children need to know I will never stop fighting for relationship with them. Your kids will thrive in an environment of unconditional love. This does not mean that they will not push back on that or tempt you to cause them to think or feel that they are unloved, because there are times when your patience wears so, so thin. But this is so important that they would know that you are willing to go to any lengths. Especially in the midst of discipline, you know, I make some hard choices and my kids can tell that I'm upset and I'm frustrated and I feel like I'm at my wit's end. But what they always need to know is that I will always keep fighting. I will always keep trying. I will always continue to build bridges rather than cut them off. I will always fight for that relationship. They need an environment of unconditional love to thrive. Thirdly, my personal relationship with God and with my spouse affects my children more than I realize. This is just so, so true. We can't talk about these things in theory and then not practice them. Like, that is the most devastating thing to kids. And, you know, one of my biggest fears has always been, as a parent who's raising kids, as a pastor who's raising kids, that somehow who I am or what I say on a Sunday morning is not who they see on a Monday morning, right? Because pastors' kids and missionary kids, they're notorious, right? They're notorious for going crazy. Pastor's kids gone wild is the kind of idea. And it's precisely because of this. They see one thing on a Sunday morning, and then they see another person on a Monday morning. And they can't compute, you know. It's really difficult to understand the dichotomy between those two things. You have to be the real deal. You can't show up with a smile on a Sunday morning. That's why we try and endeavor as a church community to make sure that this is an environment where people can be real. You don't have to come into church when you've had a rough morning and put on the right face and say all the right things, right? You can come and receive prayer. You could just be vulnerable and just kind of recognize this is not a place where we have to be fake. There's nothing in that that is of value to anyone, right? We have to be authentic. And so a part of this is recognizing that you can come here and feel bad and be upset and be frustrated, and that's okay. And that when you're at home and those frustrations come up and you just kind of recognize, you know, okay, I'm dealing with something here. You know, maybe it would give you this ability to just kind of recognize, hey, if I could be real at church, I could at home, I could be a person of faith. Right? I could be a person who recognizes, right, that things are going bad and call out on the grace of God. And, you know, we so have to see this. We so have to recognize that who we are as people gets communicated to our kids. And that's our personal responsibility. You know, who we are, how we act, how we behave, how we drive gets communicated. And it speaks in volumes, and our actions speak in volumes even more than our words could ever say. And so we have to recognize that. Fourthly, just being together can never replace interacting together in a healthy way. You know, in this generation of phones, we can all be in the living room staring at our devices, and most of my kids now, except for the youngest one, have phones. And it's devastating to family relational connection. And for those of you who raise kids in another generation, man, it is really tough. Let me just tell you, it's really tough. It's tough to get people off their devices. It's tough to get people to come together. Being together isn't enough. We need these interactions. That's what those parent cues are so good for. You know, they're opportunities to be intentional and to say, hey, let's talk about this. Let's put our phones in a stack on the table, okay? And let's leave them behind, put them on silent, and let's have a conversation. Let's talk. Let's engage together. So important. And lastly, a mother and a father are not the only influences my children need. This is something that we've recognized as a church, which is one of the things that I want to close with, because if you don't have kids and you're here in this room, I just want to ask you, to think about and pray about how you can be involved in helping influence this generation. Maybe it means volunteering downstairs or on a Sunday morning, or volunteering with Jason. He's up at the cabin right now, and just taking a weekend and just encouraging one of the kids, or just spending some time to mentor them. Maybe it's just treating them with dignity and respect as they walk in, you know, rather than kind of turning your face down at them when they spill all their animal crackers on the floor or whatever it might be. You know, maybe it's just giving them a high five, right? Smiling and showing them that you appreciate their enthusiasm and their energy rather than discouraging it. I remember as a kid, you know, bouncing around the walls of the church and, you know, older people just scolding me and ridiculing me for, you know, stepping on the chairs or something like that. And, you know, I don't want West Side to be full of a bunch of orangutans running around, right? But I'm not going to scold a kid for running across the chairs. Go ahead, run across the chairs, you know, as long as you're not bumping into people as they're praying or something. You know, I want kids to be kids. I want them to have the energy. I want them to be able to live and to be able to express, you know, this joy that can't be contained. It's just a wonderful thing. But, you know, we need you to partner with us to influence. As a parent, I'm just saying, man, I need some of you to speak into the lives of my kids, because my kids have reached this age where they don't, you know, it's like the Charlie Brown. They don't hear my voice anymore, right? But they hear some of you. You know, my kids will respond much more seriously to something that Scott says or something that Luke says than something that I'll say. And it's amazing. It's like the white lab coat thing. You know, it's like just some different voice, some different perspective. And I could be saying one thing over and over and over again, but they'll say it in some simple way and it'll just get through. Because that's what we know. Like, what we know is that kids, as they grow up, the influence of their parents wanes, and all of a sudden they care about the opinions of another adult or another peer more than they do the opinions of their parents. And so we need to step in and be that support. I want to do that for kids in my life, and I hope that you'll want to do that for the kids in our church. So again, you know, parents have a role, and it's a critical role. The family is this place where there's unconditional love, right? Where we fight for the heart. Additionally, the church is this a place that illuminates. The church is a place where we point to Jesus. We show who Jesus is to our families and to our kids. Do you have something you want to say, Linda?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I love, we just had a newcomer's night and Linda was there and was just talking about the impact that it's made on her son, Jordan. Just, you know, it is so important that we recognize that all these simple things that we're doing, they really make an impact. They really do. And I think that if Linda was telling me that Jordan, he was on his way to church and he was like, I just can't wait to get to church. Can't wait to be there. Like right now, she's like, we're heading to church. Let's get there faster. You know, let's go to church. Let's be at church. Man, that is so, so wonderful. And that's a huge win for us as a church. And so, you know, again, I just want to say, God can do so much through a church community to impact the next generation. And I just hope that you'll grab a hold of this with me, that we really have an opportunity to do a lot of great things. We have a lot of kids here at the church. They're wonderful, wonderful kids, and they're growing up fast, and they're going to be changing the world before we know it. And so this is our opportunity, and let's really fight for the heart of this next generation, really see God do some amazing things through them. I'm going to pray, and we'll close. Heavenly Father, just grateful to you for an opportunity to be together this morning. God, we just recognize that there's a lot of things for us to do as a church community. We reach out to our community around us. We have this opportunity, a wonderful opportunity for missions in Kenya, and we focus on that and invest in that. But God, we as well just see this opportunity to invest our best in the next generation. God, to really be the men and women who really take the time to call out and to encourage and to mentor and to just feed into the life of our kids. It's something that I know, looking back, I so appreciated from the adults who were willing to take the time to say a kind word to me and to call something out in me. And I just want to be that kind of person. I want to be that kind of person who pays that forward and invest in this next generation, rather than overlooking them, God, to recognize that it's not even just their future potential. They have potential now to do amazing things. And you want to use their joy and enthusiasm and innocence and energy You want to use it now. And I just pray that as much as we invest in them, God, that as we are investing, we would also receive from the incredible gift that you have imparted to these young ones. And so, God, we thank you for this opportunity. We pray that you would bless us as a church with many, many children. God, that we could do that really well. Disciple them, teach them about Jesus, and then send them out to their schools and have them change the world. God, we just thank you so much for all that you do and for the way that you've brought us together, that we are a church and we do have the opportunity to work together with the families, God, to make a lasting impact in the next generation. And we thank you. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. I'm going to close, just invite our prayer partners to come forward, if you would, and just be available for prayer. For everybody else, if you want to stand to your feet and greet a couple of people around you, say hello. Next week, we start a brand new series on Kings. So hope you join us for that. God bless.